a Chicago-born priest, Roberto Francis Prevost. Well, I'll be honest, it's Robert. But he's now Pope Leo XIV, ascended to the papacy on May 8th, cloaked as a reformer bridging the Americas. Beneath the Latin Yankee facade, a darker truth. A man hand-picked by Pope Francis's progressive machine. A machine that makes the Chicago political machine cry with envy. Peddling open borders and gun control, while the Vatican's walls stand tall and its guards wield weapons. The Secret Service could learn from them. In fact, I bet you President Donald Trump would say, "What a beautiful wall." But the worst of it all, allegations of shielding pedophiles, not only in Chicago, my friends, but Peru. And that stains this Pope. This mirrors a church in Minneapolis that bankrupted a diocese after failing to silence those victims. How do I know this? It was someone I knew, and his life was destroyed. His pain festered decades later, shattering his life. I didn't understand why, not until many years after. So tonight, I rip away this Vatican's veil. I expose Leo XIV's hypocrisy, the Vatican's financial grift, and Leo's betrayal, proving he prioritizes the Vatican over justice and his flock. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and welcome to Fired Up, episode 79. And have I got a hell of a show for you tonight. I am not a fan of the Catholic Church. I grew up Catholic, went to catechism, did everything of that nature. And I realized doing my research, my mother is actually well ahead of the game here. When we got to the stage, she left the Catholic Church. She's what you would call it evangelical. She was looking for a community, not the militaristic, stringent ways of the Vatican Church. She was a woman who barely, if at all, spoke much Spanish when we got here. So she really needed more, or she had a greater need, not only in her love and passion for God, but finding a community like that. And it just wasn't within the Catholic Church. And as I'll show later on, that's happening with more and more Latinos that make up the bulk of the Catholic Church here in America. I'm not a fan of this Pope, not a fan of his immigration policies, doesn't give a rat's tail how many girls get raped, murdered. And when I say murdered, we're not talking a simple boom, gunshot, or stab. We're talking about brutally beaten. And why is that? Well, it's what I call the grift. And I'll talk about this as well, but the Catholic Church, through Catholic Charities, has profited hundreds upon hundreds of millions. And why would the Pope want to end that gravy train? He wouldn't. Then there's the raging pedophilia with the Catholic Church. And let's be frank about this. They did everything they could and still are to keep it on the down low, literally, metaphorically and realistically. And he was part of that, allegedly. I find it ironic that right when it was starting to get hot and heavy at the turn of the century and exposing that, whoop, he has a job at the Vatican. And then as it's still raging here, whoop, he gets sent to Peru and not back to Chicago. Things that make you go home. It could all be coincidence, I'll be the first to admit, but who knows? Well, to be frank, we all would like to know. I bet you can't even say one name of any of the women that have been raped and murdered. Boy, but he sure loves that American dollar, that Yankee dollar. We're going to get into all of that and more. including the tale of somebody I used to work with who I didn't understand years later how devastating what happened to him is. At the time when you're working with somebody, you're on deadlines, timelines, you're focused on this, you just don't pay attention to what you consider the white noise, and maybe I should have, because it was obvious he wanted somebody to talk about it as much as you brought it up. And with that, well, before we get to it, let me remind you, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find this podcast at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. And with that, my friends, let's get into it. So who is Robert Francis Prevost, now Pope Leo XIV? Well, he was born September 14th, 1955 in Chicago. You know, it's obvious others are saying that, but when you think of it, you call it, instead of going, the Bears, you say, the Pope. It's a saying that many of us love to say. It's just so unique. The Bears. And it fits, you know, one syllable. The Pope. So he is actually, this is the big thing. This is what they're trying to slide through us without looking at his resume. Hey, he's the first American Pope, man. He's the first American Pope. Be happy. Be happy. But he's also Peruvian. He's American and Peruvian citizen. You know, you need those two passports in case you got to make a quick getaway. Hump Pope. So he was elected as the 267th pontiff, like I said earlier, on May 8th. And he succeeds the ultra-liberal Pope Francis, who right now, my belief, as a former Catholic, he's like, damn, it's pretty hot here. I have no shame in saying that. God smote him down on April 21st, 2025. Yeah, you can tell I don't care for the Catholic Church anymore. And you'll learn why here after this is said and done. So, as the first U.S.-born Pope and a member of the Augustinian Order, his election marks, you know, it marks a break from the tradition of European popes. And it makes sense. They're looking to expand. They've kind of bled the well dry in the Western nations. And now they're making their way heavily, heavily, heavily into the third world nations, Asia, Central and South America, into those countries. So it's a rich hotbed. They're there, but they haven't expanded as much as they are doing so now. Technically, Catholic Church has grown by like 1.5%, but all of that growth is from outside the Western nations. And I say that specifically for a reason. It's the money. It's the money. They get most of their money from the wealthy first world nations, but they do everything they can to bleed these third world nations. I have seen that firsthand as well, and I will explain that shortly too. So as the first U.S.-born Pope, his election does mark a historic break. He's known, if you listen to the opening, known as the Latin Yankee. Some people in Panama call me Blanquito because I got the Spaniard gene more than I got the typical caramel looking skin tone that all my cousins have. So he has a dual citizenship, and some, I don't see it, but some see him as a bridge between North and Latin America. There's a lot of media up and PR hype on this. You know, he's just another Pope at the end of the day. But his papal name is Leo XIV, and it honors Pope Leo XIII from 1878 to 1903. And here's where you need to wake up, American Catholics, all you conservatives, because here's a dirty little secret. All of those loving the Pope right now tend to be uber liberals, who 90% of them aren't even Catholic, aren't even churchgoers, spit on God, and they're loving that Pope. Here's the kicker. Maybe the Vatican's so out of touch, you're not going to be able to build your church in America through those people. You're not. It's just not going to happen. It's the conservatives, you know, the ones that are no longer going, less than 50% of the 20% go to Sunday Mass, which is where you get your 40 to 80% of your money for your local parishes. So I don't. I think the Vatican's so out of touch, thinking they're getting with it. Maybe those 80-year-olds think they're being more hip. So in my long-winded way, what I'm doing is I'm bringing up Pope Leo, who believed in social justice, on unity and reform. And there's something called the Rerum Novarum. And Pope Leo XIII sent out a letter. That's what that is, or encyclical addressing, which is kind of a letter to the workforce, talking about workers' rights, criticizing capitalism and socialism. Socialism, I get. Capitalism, I don't. But then again, it's easy to be hypocrites when you take from everybody. You know, it's kind of funny. Jesus never took from anyone, but there's a Catholic church every week taking. Every church, every structured religion does that. And yes, I am more evangelical than the structured in that sense. And Pope Leo XIII founded the modern Catholic social teaching, and that guides the church's stance on economic and social justice issues like labor dignity, which we all agree on, and the common good we all agree on, but it's how you view them. So for Pope Leo XIV, the current pope, this reflects a belief in advocating for the marginalized, promoting, get this, equitable systems. Not equality, but equitable, meaning, but then again, the Catholic Church does this every Sunday. They take. So they're okay with just taking from everybody to give to who they want to see given to. And this is based off of this pope and the last pope's support for illegal aliens who have no qualms in raping and murdering innocent Americans, as well as environmental justice. And I go back to Pope Francis, because Pope Leo aligns with Pope Francis. I'll never forget this, because of the hypocrisy. And people are like, oh, it's a big deal. It's not the big deal. It's what it represents. When Pope Francis said, we don't need AC. The world could do without AC. As his sorry self had a palace that was AC, where he lived at, the guest house, whatever they tried to sit there say. I'd like to see that 365 days a year to believe it. And then their museum, certain temp for all those billions in artifacts and paintings and such. Needing to be at a certain temp. But hey, we, the little man, we're okay without AC. It represents who and what the Catholic Church is. They don't care about the people, but they love preaching to us. Now, Pope Leo was raised in a devout Catholic family in Chicago suburb. His family, it helped him decide, well, not help them, but their actions, how they live, helped him decide to enter the priesthood. He was an altar boy. That helped shape his vocation. Quote, my family's faith was the foundation of my life. So it was a, we'll get to that. So, and a childhood friend also said that he was always unwavering. The family was with their church attendance. And during a 2023 Vatican News interview, he described his vocation as missionary driven. Quote, my vocation, like that of every Christian, is to be a missionary to proclaim the gospel wherever one is. Unquote. So he talked the game, good game, about a commitment to service. So what was his rise to power? Well, he was ordained in 1982. Studied mathematics and philosophy at Villanova. Theology in Chicago, and canon law in Rome. Became fluent in five languages, English, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, and French. Hey, I'm not saying he's not dumb. He's smart. Smart as a fox, and is going to get all our chickens, as in all our dollars, and try to dictate through sway of Catholics how America should be. I got news for you. Those your numbers of Catholics is going to go down if you go down that route. Worse than it already is. He did missionary work in Peru. And that was from like 85 to 98. Then from there, he had U.S. leadership role. He was elected provincial of the Augustinian province of Chicago. And that was in 1999. He oversaw the regional operations. Now, he was only there for 2 years, which is odd. Usually these type of jobs, they're there for a while. Things that make you go home. What happened right around 2001? Well, the pedophilia. Corruption cases started to come to light. And lo and behold, and I don't know, but you have to ask these questions. A good journalist will ask these questions. And while I was never officially, I don't have a journalism degree, as a media company, we were seen as as journalists, and we kind of self-taught ourselves how to be journalists. It's not hard. You don't need to go to college to be a good journalist. You don't. You just have to have honesty, integrity, and be willing to print everything from an unbiased source. So whenever I write, I always try to present both sides. I'll present both sides here, but it's obvious I am tainted, but I will present both sides. That's why I'm giving you the full rundown of who and what he is. So from 2001-2013, he was at the Vatican in Rome. He ended up going back to Peru in 2014. Now, again, the pedophile cases were still going strong at that point. So why ship him back to Chicago, where he would most undoubtedly be forced to have to answer for what was happening around the country? Chicago was no different. But he was appointed by Francis as apostolic administrator in 2014 and bishop of Chiclayo in 2015. And he also served as an administrator and vice president of the Peruvian Bishops Conference. He was on his way up. Him and the Pope got along. If they weren't strong friends, they were strong ideological allies. He was named prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops and president of the Pontifical Commission for Latin America in 2023. Big roles. And these are roles that gave him influence over global bishop selections, i.e. helping Pope Francis build his flock up within the conclave. People that would eventually wind up in the conclave. Very, very important role. That gave him visibility among the cardinals, and he was elevated to a cardinal in September of 2023. So just 2 years ago. His global experience, pastoral work, and Vatican insider status, all of that positioned him as an extremely strong candidate, despite the dark horse, which kind of, to me, shows that how out of touch our media and our reporters are with what's happening at the Vatican. There were a couple of people who got it right. In fact, Steve Bannon got it, was talking about this guy. I kind of found that shocking. I didn't realize Bannon was that well-versed in that. And he picked the horse and got it right. So all of this experience, working tightly with Pope Francis, being indoctrinated in the social views of Pope Francis, that kind of should have told us where he was headed. You know, it's funny. None of this stuff was brought up last week. But then again, we just don't care. We care for more of the pomp circumstance. Woo! New Pope! Woo! American! Woo! 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 Well, who is he? I don't know. I don't care. American! Woo! Idiots. Oh, man. So, let's see. So, his time in Chicago, he was in Chicago in 2000 during the global Catholic sex abuse scandals, early escalation. This went on for about a dozen years. Now, the pedophilia had been going on for decades upon decades, that we can confirm, likely going on generations, if not hundreds, if not thousands of years. You know, so he was provost in Chicago in 2000 during the global Catholic sex abuse scandal. And he allowed Father James Ray, who had been suspended since 1991 for 9 years for credible allegations of sexual abuse to minors, he let him reside at a friary right near a Catholic school without notifying staff. Y'all know the law says pedophiles, we have to know about it. You can go online, you can see it, boom, but you'd be shocked at how many are living around you. So that drew significant criticism as the scandal intensified. And that comes from a Boston Globe investigation. And I want you to think about it. It intensified. There 2 years. Let's bring you on over to Rome. And he left the U.S. in 2001 as prior general of the Augustinians. And he was there for 12 years. You see what I'm saying? Went to Peru for for at least a decade. Then he's going to Rome for a decade, but was only in Chicago for a couple years. And when the corruption or the pedophilia corruption scandal, the KY scandal. They flew him out. It was a high-profile role that he had at the Vatican. Again, General of the Augustinians. And then he moved to Peru in 2014 as, again, Bishop Chiclayo. So, now, they say, hey, look, this is a strategic use of his missionary experience. You know, from 85 to 98, he was in Peru. Obviously, I've been tossing innuendos, but what I'm trying to say is the timing suggests the Chicago controversy of pedophilia and his own controversy there prompted the church to relocate him to a less scrutinized region to avoid the fallout of the pedophilia scandal. Flying him out, then it's still ongoing, flying him to Peru. I have to say there's no direct evidence that confirms the Peru move was to avoid Chicago scandal's limelight. Man. So there are later allegations we're going to get into of mishandling abuse within Chiclayo. And that just all that does is further speculate about the earlier relocation, his role in knowing what was happening. If he wasn't a pedophile himself, he obviously knew what was happening, is what I believe. Am I right? I don't know. We'll never know. The church, if anything, they're pretty good at covering up secrets. So his election as Pope, May 8th, after four ballots in the conclave, Prevost secured the required two-thirds majority, which was at least 89 of the 133 votes. And, you know, just FYI, it was one of the largest ever group of cardinal electors. So his role, as I said, as prefect of the dicastery for bishops, that gave him prominence. You know, he met cardinals during the ad limina visits, while his global experience, his progressive stance, it appealed to all the recruits that Pope Francis was building. We're going to talk about that, how he kind of set it up to have his legacy being another progressive. Now, the reason I say progressive is they're trying to sell you on the fact he's moderate because of his stances on certain things, but he hasn't talked about same-sex marriage or homosexuality or any of that like in over a decade. So all that stuff's old news. And he's got to show a decorum of some kind of semblance. My issue is the pedophilia and the immigration. Why? Because it's a grift immigration-wise, and I'll tell you why, and I'll explain why I believe that to be the case. And obviously the pedophilia speaks for itself. So he was announced as Pope Leo XIV, May 8th. He appeared on St. Peter's Basilica balcony saying, "Peace be with you." And he called for a missionary church that builds bridges. I was told under his breath, he said, "Where's the KY?" Yeah, I don't like him. His election defied expectations, they say. Do we really know? I mean, the truth of the matter, this is one of those things where we have no clue as to what to expect. So even placing odds, it's like Bannon got it right. And I still think these are more educated guesses than anything else. But supposedly he wasn't a top contender in the betting markets. I just think the betting markets are out of touch. When you, after researching them, I'm like, man, who else is better suited to continue the legacy of hatred towards their own Catholics than this Pope? Yeah, that's right. I said it. They don't care for you. I'm talking about American Catholics. You know, they don't care how many of us get murdered. Actually, I'm not a Catholic anymore. You know, I grew up but abandoned it. So his elections did defy expectations. And it's politics. See, we forget. These are regular people when you get them alone. And he was able to politic, unite enough cardinals seeking continuity with Francis' social priorities. And like I said, they stacked the deck. Nothing wrong with that. When you're promoting, you promote like-minded minds. And that's what they did. And eventually that deck was filled with progressives who were going to vote for another progressive. So let's move on to the fixes in. How Francis stacked the cardinals to elect a progressive pope. So here's what you may not know. Francis appointed 108 of the 133 cardinal electors. And when I say the 108 of the 133, that those are the ones eligible to vote in the 2025 conclave. So that ensured a majority aligned with his priorities. That's 108 that he appointed. Who knows out of the other 25 that were already progressive like him. He globalized the college, increasing representation from America, Africa, 18 electors, Asia, 23, and Latin America, 17. Now, these are areas that are very supportive of progressive social issues. I mean, we're all for poverty alleviation and legal migration. Therefore, taking everybody's money to say they're going to help with poverty and illegal alien invasions. And what they wanted to do is wanted to reduce European dominance. I think they tapped out the market of the first world nations. In fact, to the point numbers are diminishing. Now, I think they believe they can salvage the American market with this pope because the American market is the cash cow of the world. But the European market, they've already got it embedded with certain tax laws. When you go to church, money is automatically taken in some of these countries. Like, they get a wealth of money from Germany because of that. So, what's left to tap? The African and Latin American and Asian countries. So, that's a smart move on his part, strategically speaking. So, this is what you call a generation shift. 108 out of 133. I guess they age out after 80. So, many of the cardinals appointed by previous popes had aged out. And it allowed Francis to appoint younger, diverse cardinals, is how it's written. But the reality is younger, progressive cardinals. Again, strategic appointments in favor of progressive successor. Let's not sugarcoat anything. So Francis was elevated to prevost, or Francis elevated prevost to cardinal. Again, that was in September 2023. He appointed him prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, as I said earlier, and president of the Pontifical Commission for Latin America. Powerful roles. And it gave him, again, global influence and visibility. He presided, prevost is, that is, over a Francis-led reform. Got a little bit of the women vote, three women, to the voting block for the bishop nomination, not the conclave. On a side note, I saw a tweet and it said, not one damn woman. There's several hundred million Catholics, women worldwide. We don't get one vote in the conclave. I tweeted, well, you can always convert them to Islam. Oh, man. But anyway, so that kind of helps him gain support as a progressive. It showed his loyalty to Francis Kisterine. Oh man. So they were able to build a completely liberal leaning bloc. There's a couple of other names I have here, but y'all won't know them. Yeah. Supposedly no single faction held a majority per Newsweek. Now, do you really believe that? No. If he appointed 108 out of 133, yes, there was probably an extreme progressive bloc. So this allowed Francis's legacy to continue. And to remind you, Francis is, he's a progressive. His focus is on social justice, climate change, and pastoral inclusivity, they say. And that's what Pope Leo will continue. Wow. Climate change, social justice. Oh, man. Again, everyone that supports him, 90% of them aren't even Catholics. They don't go to church. They spit on God. And look, I got to be honest. Pope Francis loved it. There was word on the street is that he loved the camera. He loved the media. I say word on the street, but it was another cardinal who said that. And he didn't care for him. He said, yeah, this guy's a media hound. So he supposedly has centrist position as opposing women's ordination and ambiguity on same-sex marriage. See, all his takes have been years and years and years ago. He hasn't said anything since. So we don't know where he stands today. I could be wrong. Maybe he came out with my research. I did not find it. So why do I say the fix was in? I don't say it as good or bad. It's just fact. 2 days, 4 ballots. Man, these things sometimes take forever. So he quickly built consensus. So they probably went in with maybe him and somebody else. They didn't get the 2/3 necessary. Is that what I said it was, 2/3? Let me check real quick. I am correct. 2/3. So probably happened is there were a couple candidates, and he got the majority of the votes, but just not enough to really take it out. So the other guy probably didn't want to give up a couple more ballots, and finally they realized, like, this guy's going to win it all. Why delay the inevitable? So they say he broke consensus because it was likely due to a balanced profile. No, it was because it was a progressive conclave. Oh, man. And I'm sure Francis probably had a big hand in selecting a lot of them to be in that position. Thus, they owed their loyalty to him. Now, they say that, well, the conclave is not guaranteed. No, it was as close to guarantee as you can get, regardless of what Newsweek and any other liberals state. So, let's talk about the conservative, the American conservative. Well, we view his election as a progressive win. He's not doing anything for us. He's going to be just as bad, if not worse, than the previous pope, who actually hates conservatives. He'll take our money, but hates us. That's why I say, damn, it's warm down here. A little water here, Pope Francis? Okay. So, let's see, where was I? Again, he's not a centrist. He may sit there and say he opposes women's ordination. They all do. And I view that more as he says that to appease the other factions, as small as they are, to help get their support. Again, he is pro-illegal alien invasion and pro-climate change belief. Okay, rapid election again. The fix was in. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to Pope Leo and open borders. Pope Leo the 14th stands. So, he's actively promoted open borders. He's used his X platform to advocate for welcoming illegal aliens. And I believe that came out of Politico just last week. And that highlights and epitomizes who and what he is. A supporter of murder, rape, crime. I have never heard the Vatican Church sit there and say one thing about how sorrowful they are for all the rapes and murders of these American women. Never. Wayne, that's beneath them. No. If you're going to sit there and get yourself into American politics, and you're supposed to be, and we are all God's children, it says a lot when you avoid that portion of the topic. Again, ignoring the crime and violence linked to illegal aliens. So the Catholic Church talks about every person, regardless of nationality, is made in the image of God and deserves respect and care. I get it. My family falls under that. This aligns with what's called Gaudium et Spes. Gaudium et Spes. And that emphasizes human dignity. Now, the Catholic World Report quotes the Christian argument for open borders. Quote, welcome the stranger, from Matthew 25:35. And it's a core tenet of the faith. So what they try to tell us is that migration is a humanitarian issue. Yeah. That's what they tell us. That's not what they believe with their big, beautiful wall. So what's our pushback? Well, we agree with everything there. But the truth is we are also a land of laws and order. No different than the Vatican. They have 10 zillion laws and orders. Yet this current pope and the last pope say, damn our laws, while practicing theirs. What is biblical hospitality? Well, the scripture calls for hospitality to foreigners. Leviticus 19:34. The quote, the foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Unquote. We can welcome whoever we want, but if they're raping, killing, and robbing us, I think the Bible says a few things on how to put your enemy down, too. The Pope kind of conveniently ignores that. Regardless, Leo supposedly advocates. Well, he does advocate for that. He does advocate for the biblical hospitality. So he tries to put the church as a moral voice for migrants. Well, a little bit of common sense here. America has been the most giving country in the world, Pope Leo. If you weren't so busy hiding the KY, you would know that. We have compassion, but we also have our limits of what we can do, just as the church does, that big, beautiful wall. Hell, you can't even fly over the Vatican without getting penalized. So the church views borders as bridges, not barriers. And you're right, Pope. And there's a way to properly cross that bridge. Just like you have a gate of entry at the Vatican where everybody has to go through, we have it as well. But the Pope, not good enough, got to let him cross over when they want, whenever they want. That's what Pope Francis and Pope Leo will continue. Francis believed that, and Leo will continue it. Look, guys, I'm just cutting down to the chase. I'm not being politically correct here. I'm just telling you at the end of the day, this is who they are and what they want. So we've seen what happens when borders are overrun. But the Vatican hasn't, because they have closed borders. They are seen as a nation state. For those of you not aware, well, let me remind you of Panama. Noriega hid out in the Catholic Church for, I don't know, it was weeks or days. But the Vatican has defended asylum seekers. You know, that's going to end one day. One day that's going to happen in a bad country and they're just going to storm it and kill them all. Just a matter of time. Because when you keep giving, 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 and not demanding reciprocity in terms of changing to be a better person, things will just get worse. And that's where we're at right now. And the church is leading that. So the European conservative, this past January, Pope Francis, open borders, but not in the Vatican. Things that make you go, They highlighted this. And they critique the Vatican's own strict border policies, just as I am. And Leo is going to inherit that and maintain that strictness. So we've seen what happens when borders are overrun. And the Vatican must agree, or they should open their borders up. Tear down that wall, Mr. Leo. The church also argues that immigration fosters cultural exchange and economic growth. Again, aligning with Leo's vision of global culture of encounter. We do agree with that, as long as it's legal immigration. The church doesn't, though. They're open borders, baby. So let's dig a little deeper here and talk about what the church doesn't like us to talk about. It's what I call the unknown grift. So let's expose that. The Catholic Church in a crisis, a financial comeback through immigration, and a Pope's clash with Trump. So, a little background here. The Catholic share of the U.S. population has dropped from 24% in 2007 to 20% in 2025. And I think back right around 1960, it was like 50%. So what I'm saying is back in the 60s and earlier, 50%, if I'm correct, Americans identified as Catholic. 2007, 24%, 2025, 20%. It's diminishing. And that comes to us per Pew Research Center's Religious Landscape Studies, showing the steady decline over two decades. And many have left for evangelical denominations, or they have become religiously unaffiliated. And that has impacted, guess what? The church's coffers, their influence, and financial base, the coffers. So evangelicals, so we're Christians. So the term has Protestant roots, but what an evangelical is, it's literally every group that calls themselves Christian. Methodist, Baptist, or non-denominational churches, and they're blowing up in size. And that means it's a focus more on a personal relationship with Jesus. You don't have to go through the church, the priest. See, the Catholic Church tries to portray themselves as we are the gateway to God. I mean, they say that the Pope has been ordained by God. Really? You mean that includes the popes that fornicated? I think there was a Pope who died while fornicating. I don't think God would get it wrong. So I don't buy into that. But that's what they want you to believe. So evangelicals, we believe in a more personal relationship with Jesus, the Bible's authority, and we believe in sharing our faith with one another, not the Catholic Church runs everything. And this is done through typically a lively community-driven worship. And that differs from the traditional Catholic Mass. And I think that's one reason why my mother, why we left. Once we moved to the States, we left the Catholic Church. I stopped the catechism. You know, we just abandoned the Catholic Church. And I think she did not feel a sense of community. But she always felt it in the pocketbook when they were asking for that money. Money! Money, money, money! So, for Catholic activities like Mass and Catechism, that's typically held within the church. It's centered on structured worship or education, and it's central to the Catholic practice. They don't have the same level of informal social bonding that evangelical churches often prioritize. It's just black and white. That's not up for debate. It's kind of how it is. So Pew data also shows that 29% of that 20% of Catholics, so a third of Catholics in the United States are Hispanic. Wee-wee, that's me. Or I used to be. But many are leaving for evangelical churches. And it's reflecting the cultural the cultural assimilation challenges. In other words, the Catholic Church is struggling to keep its members, because we're just not happy. My mom wasn't happy in that church. This was 30 years ago. My mom was a trailblazer. I never knew it. So what's happening is younger generations are integrating into broader American religious trends. You see it. You see some of these big churches. The pastors are younger. They're hipper. They're more with it. Now, the downside is, and it happens in every church, whether it's white, black, Asian leadership communities, a lot of them are corrupt and they get found out. You know, Joel Osteen, man, those guys live like kings. And that's not how I was brought up. You shouldn't be living high on the hog off of your flock's money. But yet they do. And then there was this other Baptist preacher said he had a dream that God told him he needed a plane and the flock needed to provide so he could get one. So there's a lot of bad out there. But that said, the younger generation is looking for churches that are, for lack of a better word, more hip to them. And that's not the Catholic Church. Now, another reason this occurs is because Hispanic Catholics, especially younger generations, are drawn to churches that talk about personal faith. They just want to go be one with God, and they don't want to have to deal with, you got to do catechism, got to do this, got to do that, got to do this. It's very rigid. And they also want the vibrant worship. Again, well, that's what I mean by hip. It's vibrant. It's sad to say, but it's entertaining to them. I don't know if I agree with that, but that's how it is. And the community engagement. I think that's great. We live in a world where everything's so stringent. You go give your money. You go to your multiple courses a week, catechism. Everything's stringent. There's no community. You know, your relationship with God must go through the Catholic Church. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, like I said, we left the Catholic Church decades ago now. Maybe they changed. Maybe I never quite understood. But I just never cared for them. And when I started studying the Catholic Church in college, how deeply ingrained they were in politics, how they had no qualms in helping to start wars and the death and money and power being their primary goal. Yeah, I just don't care for them. And I don't think that's changed. I think Pope Francis wanted his influence. The way you do it was, which pope was it? I want to say Pope John Paul. Let me double check that. Yes, Pope John Paul II. To me, he did it the right way. He destroyed, helped bring down the Iron Curtain. Why? Because of his love and passion for God and to bring it to the Iron Curtain. And he did. This Pope wants illegal aliens because of the financial grift. But I'm digressing. We'll get to that in a second. So back to why they're losing Hispanics. community engagement, family, vibrant worship, personal faith versus a structure that we have to go through the Catholic Church. And that aligns more with what is becoming more and more American cultural norms, offering a sense of belonging. So again, my mother fell into that. Because we went through a lot. I remember taking Bible study for a couple of years with a church that most people don't like, but I take great pride in respecting them. I respect any church that is willing to go out there and preach the gospel, who understands they will be spit on, they will be yelled at, they will have doors slammed in their face. Doesn't mean I agree with them, but I respect them because they truly are one with their faith. Can't tell you the last time I saw a Catholic who was out there preaching the gospel who wasn't actually working for the church. And again, that's also reflected in the drop. At a 20%, only 44% attend Sunday Mass. So there's a lot of Catholics in name only. They call it rhino. I guess it's kino, sino. We're Catholics. Yes, so 24% of U.S. Catholics in Sunday Mass attendance has fallen 24% to 24% of U.S. Catholics in 2023. So even less. So out of the 20%, only 24% go to Sunday Mass. That's down 55% from 1965. And that's according to CARA, or C-A-R-A, at Georgetown University. I don't know if you say it as CARA. So, and local parishes rely on the collections for about 40 to 60% of their operating funds. And that's through a 2021 study. And that is estimated to be 10 to 13 billion annually. So they're losing now on about 20 billion annually if they had full attendance. And obviously the declining attendance, that's led to massive revenue drops. And that has threatened parish sustainability. Rural parishes are the most hit, obviously, demographics in terms of actual living numbers there. There's a well-known one in rural Iowa that closed. But that said, when you preach immigration, when you sit there and say the Pope is ordained, when you sit there and have a rich, infamous history of corruption, abuse, when you cover up pedophilia, and yet you still want to maintain the rigid doctrine and impose that on everybody when your own house is a house of cards, of course, you're not going to be able to maintain attendance, much less create new Catholics. We believe in open borders advocacy, doing it the right way. We don't believe in you not condemning same-sex marriage in terms of the Catholic Church. Yeah, that's one reason I'm indifferent to whether you're gay or not. But that's a Catholic doctrine, and they want to destroy that doctrine. You don't see Islam doing that. Then you combine that with the KY cover-ups, as I call it, the pedophilia cover-ups, the rigid doctrine over community building, and none of that works. They're alienating traditional Catholics. So the Catholics you really want, the Catholics that are willing to give not only their volunteer time, but give financially, those are the ones you're driving off. And this Pope loved the applause, the media he got from all the non-Catholics. Ooh, good Pope. Again, driving attendance drop from 55% in 1965 to 24% in 2023. Over 25% drop there. 31% drop. Wow, that's a lot. The pedophilia scandal costs, the churches paid $3.8 billion in settlements for clergy sexual abuse through 2022. And that is per bishopaccountability.org. And that includes a $660 million payout by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles in 2007. Who knows about Chicago? The guy that should have been held accountable was flown out in 2001. Other examples include the Diocese of Boston paying $157 million in 2003. Again, can't hold Chicago accountable when the main dude's in Rome, flown out after only 2 years. Archdiocese of Portland settled for $130 million in 2007. Again, can't hold Chicago accountable when the main guy hiding it is flown out to work in Rome. But you can tell the scale of financial damage that resulted because of corruption and pedophilia. About 33 U.S. dioceses have filed for bankruptcy because of these abuse claims. That comes from the National Catholic Reporter in 2023. Obviously, the scandal has eroded trust and is driving away parishioners. Everyone should be furious at the Vatican. They've been aware of the pedophilia. Well, they've been aware of it since day one. In my notes of my research, says since 2002, but no, bull. Since day one. I'd say most definitely years earlier. How are you transferring people around with the Vatican? What's all this movement? It's costing us money. So they've known about this for generations. And the Vatican, aware of the pedophilia, has neither turned in nor prosecuted anyone that would be deemed a senior official for the cover-ups, protecting figures like Cardinal Law while victims suffer a betrayal of justice, obviously eroding the church's moral credibility. So, who is Cardinal Law, you ask? Bernard Law, 1931 to 2017. He was an American Catholic cardinal, Archbishop of Boston. He was in Boston from 84 to 2002. And he covered up a priest's sexual abuse in Boston, and it was exposed by the Boston Globe in 2002. He stepped down in 2002, moved to Rome, held a Vatican post until 2011. That's what I'm talking about, people. You see what I'm talking about? I mean, that validates all of my speculation as needing to be investigated by news media organizations about Pope Leo. Was he flown to Rome because he helped cover up, which I think he did. And now he's Pope. How disgusting can you get? That epitomizes in my heart who Pope Leo is and what he represents. The corruption of the Vatican Church. It has gone on, if not over 1,000 years. I'm trying to think. How long has the Catholic Church been around? Yeah, first century AD. So, it's a long while. My point being is, they've been corrupt. The Inquisition, I forget what it's called. I have that in my notes. Let me find that out real quick. Certificates of indulgences, payments or donations tied to the church's claim of granting remission of temporal punishment for sins. Man, all these things, it was exploit the poor and those who were deeply fundamentalists. And that helped spark the Protestant Reformation, especially through Martin Luther's 95 Theses in 1517. That is what Pope Leo represents. Again, I have to repeat this, my friends. If you're Catholic, you should be furious at the selection of Pope Leo. The Vatican was aware of the pedophilia. Now I see why the Boston Globe wrote they were aware of it since 2002. Why? Well, because of Cardinal Law. While victims suffered, this man was living large in Rome in the Vatican. Again, covered up priest sexual abuse in Boston. He stepped down, moved to Rome, held a Vatican post. They were hiding him out. There was a scandal erupting in Chicago. Pope Leo was flown out. 2001. You got a job in the Vatican, Pope. Robert Francis Prevost, flown out in 2001. See, this bears further investigation by media. I can't get over that. But let's move on. The GRIP, Immigration Services Revenue. Internal Revenue Service, well, they are the Immigration Services Revenue. The Catholic Charities. It's a U.S.-based organization. It earned $620 million in federal grants for immigration and refugee services in 2020 to 2023. I thought it was $800. Maybe my notes are wrong. Buku money. $97 million 2020. $125 million 2021. $164 million 2022. $134 million in 2023. This is a massive gravy train that is filling the coffers because they have less and less Catholics to sit there and take money from. Not to mention all the pedophilia money they've had to pay out. Well, they're using our own taxpayers to refill their coffers. Thank you, Joe Biden. I guess that was his penance. Hey, don't sit there. I mean, ignore the fact that I am pro-abortion and will kill a baby in the womb right before they're born, and I'll give you these contracts. Okay. Now, I don't know that happened. Likely you did it, but man. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops received $193 million for similar programs. Okay, so there you go, $200 million. What did I say, $620? So over $800 million. And that comes through their 2023 financial statements. So combined, that's what it is. So combined, these entities have earned $813 million since 2020. Think about that. Since 2020, to resettle illegal aliens, $813 million. Well, I'm sorry, not illegal aliens, but immigrants, as they like to be called. As a conservative, you see the church's open borders push. That's a grift to offset the declining attendance and the pedophilia scandal cause. I repeat myself, but it's worth repeating. Now you can see why the popes are like, no, Senor Trump. Rules are good. I'm sorry. Rules are only good at the Vatican. America, open border. And the American government to the Catholic Church. What? Not enough? Okay. Then they go, oye, papi, I got the job for you. You see that toilet? You go clean it good now, you hear? Joe Biden, where's my money? Oh, yeah, Lucy. You see that kitchen? Roberto, you see that field, that garden? Hey, according to Jasmine Crockett and others, that's all we're good for. Oh, man. I think it was Pope Francis that sat there and said Trump's border wall was, quote, a barrier to mercy, unquote. Huh? And yet they strictly enforce their Vatican border walls with fines up to 25,000 euros. And 1 euro is worth more than a dollar, so it's probably over 30,000 there. So if federal funding for migrant services is cut, the church could lose $182 million annually. $134 million for Catholic Charities and $48 million for the USCCB. They don't want that gravy train to stop. Well, yes, Senor Trump, J.D. Vance. Border walls are bad. So Trump poses a significant risk to that revenue stream. And it potentially destabilizes the church's finances further. They're desperate. I mean, those golden toilets over there, all those beautiful artwork in the basement, they got to keep all that nice and heated and nice and shiny. Yes, as a former Catholic, and what I've learned, I'm not a fan of the Catholic Church, as you can tell. So Pope Leo, as Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost, he criticized Trump's border wall as contrary to mercy as well in a 2023 sermon. I think that is correct. Yes. Oh, yeah, that's what it is. And he also shared a 2025 post that's going viral. And it quotes a National Catholic Reporter article, quote, Jesus doesn't ask us to rank our love for others, unquote. Yet the church does. Buy the certificate of indulgence, my friends, and you too can get to heaven much quicker. Don't you dare talk about us, you hypocrite. I mean, if they could get away with a certificate of indulgence, they would. And other churches have sat there and done that whole slimy shtick. They prey on the elders. You know, a little bit of money here, God will look at that with mercy. I mean, that's all the lines they use. So this stance of open borders is politically and financially aligned. And it aligns with the church's financial interests. But I got to tell you, with social media, I mean, people like me speaking, others speaking, y'all know about it. And it's not going to help your growth. And I'm happy for that. I truly am. Oops, looking at my notes here. Okay, the Vatican Wall. Let's talk about the Vatican Wall. It was built in the 9th century and reinforced over time. It's quite the stark contradiction to Leo's open borders rhetoric. There are fines of 10 to 25,000 euros and prison sentences of 1 to 4 years for unauthorized entry. Woo, that's a strict border, baby. That's a big, beautiful wall. Again, and this comes from the European Conservatory from January. A new Vatican decree that came out, fines of 10 to 25,000 euros and prison sentences of 1 to 4 years for unauthorized entry. Again, woo, strict border control there. If the wall is symbolic, as his defenders argue, then it's even worse, because tearing it down would demonstrate true belief in open borders. But the Vatican won't do that. They refuse to. And it shows their hypocrisy, as Reagan said. Tear down that wall, Mr. Leo. Oh, man. Where's your compassion for the murder victims, Leo? Francis and Leo's stance ignores the real dangers of unchecked immigration. And that is violent, criminal, illegal aliens. So I'm going to tell you about a few, just a few. I mean, I saw hundreds. But I'm just going to tell you about a few of the worst incidents. And you're going to get shocked. Obviously, we all know about Laken Riley. 22-year-old young, beautiful girl, nursing student. Raped and murdered. I think he bashed her in the head over and over with a stone. That was in February of last year in Athens, Georgia, by Jose Antonio Ibarra, an illegal alien from Venezuela, who was let out of jail in New York and sent down to Georgia. Beaten and strangled while jogging. Rachel Morin, a mother of five, 37 years old, raped and murdered in Maryland. But Abrego Garcia, we got to bring him back. He's a good Maryland man. You don't even know who Rachel Morin is. Murdered by Victor Antonio Martinez Hernandez. Us Latinos, we love our last names. An illegal immigrant from El Salvador. Beaten and dragged into the woods. Never heard one damn word from Pope Francis. But William, he's a pope. Is he supposed to know all these people? Yeah, if he's going to get into American politics, talk about open borders, you better have a damn comment when it all goes south, which what you're proposing or pushing and you're a proponent of goes south. Yeah, a few words of condolence to your Catholic flock out here that you beg for money that you're getting a rich old contract over. Damn right you should say a few words. Then there's Lisbeth Medina, 16-year-old cheerleader. Let me repeat, 16-year-old cheerleader. Killed in December 2023 in Texas by Rafael Govea Romero, an illegal alien from Mexico, stabbed in her apartment. Then there's Maria Gonzalez, 11 years old. Repeat, 11 years old. Murdered in August of 2023 in Pasadena, Texas, by Juan Carlos Garcia Rodriguez, an illegal alien from Guatemala, strangled in her own home. There's a whole boatload more I could have gone through. Those are some of the most dastardly. So that is what Pope Leo promotes, condones. And I say condone because he's silent. Silent about all these deaths, all these criminals running around. Why? Because he's got a big old fat juicy contract. He looks at that contract like a John looks at a sailor looks at a chick at the corner of a pier come payday. That's how Leo looks at that contract. I'm just thinking Leo knows guys, priests, who looked at boys that way too. So, he cloaks this in compassion. And you know, one thing you got to ask yourself, are they so much pushing this? And they don't talk about the pedophilia. It's kind of like a distraction. Let's push our open borders. We've got a fat contract. It's what the mainstream media loves. So we're going with them. We are being befriended by the mainstream media, who isn't even church going, who doesn't even believe in God, spits on God. But let's go that route because it hides the pedophilia we so desperately want everybody to forget, which we won't, Leo. Leo's using, and Francis is using, progressive policies to polish the Vatican's image while victims suffer in silence. As a conservative, we believe nations must control their borders to protect citizens and maintain order. There's a couple of books by somebody, a professor at Yale, I want to say, or called Tiger Mom, Amy Chua, talks about the destruction and fall of nations from within. That's happening in the United States. Great read. I strongly urge you. It's like, you know, people like to look at the world in black and white. It's not. And most powerful nations are destroyed from within. Did you know that the Roman army at its end, at its downfall, it's like 90% of it was were made up of mercenaries. They'd lost their love for their nation. So we must control our borders to protect, not only to protect citizens, but maintain order. Open borders undermine sovereignty and it allows unchecked inflows. And that destabilizes governance, especially in the U.S. as we're seeing, and even worse in Europe. The rule of law. I got to be honest. 99.9% immigrants. We are for the rule of law. My mother, she bless her heart, she's happy. There's law and order here compared to having to deal with Torrijos and Noriega growing up. I was jacked up in a, I want to say alley. It wasn't really an alley, but away from the friends and all, from a friend of mine saying, dude, shut up. You're a protected citizen because you're American, or you're protected class because you're American. We may not be here tomorrow because of your mouth, because I was running my mouth about Noriega. And this was maybe a year or two before the invasion. Immigrants and immigration must follow legal processes. We must, in order to prevent crime and trafficking. The European conservative exposes the Vatican's hypocrisy. Why? Well, they have documented how they advocate open borders. We all know while they enforce the strict Vatican entry. The January 2025 decree with harsh penalties. I keep repeating this because we have to understand the hypocrisy of the Vatican. It's a double standard, and it pisses me the hell off. Unregulated migration? Well, it also strains welfare systems. Look at Springfield, Massachusetts. Become a joke. But the Haitian community overran it. The economy spiraled out of control. No jobs for the working class. They were undercutting and being paid under the table by companies. See, this is why corporations and the Chamber of Commerce are not conservative. People seem to think they are. They're as uber liberals you come. Why do they get under the table labor, illegal labor? They love it. They're not our friends. It destroys our social service systems. Destroys our health care. And that is what Leo is pushing and promoting. Harm to our local economies by overwhelming civil resources. No, William, it's his mercy. Well, Leo speaks five languages, has a degree at Villanova. Again, Villanova must be the college of dumbasses because he should know this. And he does. He just doesn't care. Why? Because it's a big old fat old contract that earns over $800 million every 4 years. Having a national identity is important to the survival of any nation. When you lose that and you have various factions, your nation will fall. It's just a matter of time. National identity and traditions. And you know who tells you that? Immigrants. They want to be American. They want to learn English. They want a job. They want to get educated. Instead, what do they tell us? Democrats. Oh, yeah, Jose, I am fighting for you to earn $30 a year flipping burgers. What? You don't need education, Jose. I just took care of you. You're going to flip burgers for the rest of your life. We need dumb Latinos like you, Jose. That's what they're promoting. So those following lawful pathways are also undermined. The people who want to come in here properly, illegal aliens, they step in front of them. You know, one thing about it, the All In podcast, I love it. Great podcast. The host, the guy with the glasses, I remember. He was on Megyn Kelly. And Megyn Kelly was asking, do you know these names? Oh, you're trying to belittle me. Yes, because you should know those names. I know those names, and I know the names of the bad guys. I know actors and how it works on both sides. You only care about winning with your ideology. No, you don't care. That's the problem. Until it's your kid that gets murdered, you don't care. What's this guy's name? Jason Calcanis. Now, he seems like a nice guy. I'm sure I could have a beer with him, get along, but we completely disagree. I, who come from, technically my parents aren't immigrants. My dad is Puerto Rican, came here freely, and my mom came through my dad, though she had to gain her citizenship. But I'm sure if it happened to Jason's kids, he'd sing a different tune. I'd love to hear him say, no. I will believe in due process for the murder of my daughter or son. That's the typical human nature, the belief in human nature. You don't care till it happens to you. No, she wasn't trying to belittle you. She was trying to point out you only see it one way. You refuse to see it another way. So, the reason I brought that up is everything I'm talking about is not because we don't have compassion. It's because things have to be done a certain way, a right way. That's fair to everybody. And if you don't, and see, the moment you come here illegally, and I don't care what these morons say, it's not a crime. It's a freaking crime. The moment you cross over illegally, you have broken the law. And to me, any judge, did you come here illegally? Yes, sir. You broke the law. You got to go back. End of story. But we got activist judges. Their day will come, I'm sure, if we can win the House and the Senate. And I think we have a good chance, because if the economy plays out as I think it will, it could set us up for the midterms. They got to get some deals done. So those who are trying to come in proper order, they're undermined by illegals. And Leo's okay with that. White got a big fat contract. We have compassion, but we have limits on that compassion in terms of being pragmatic, understanding how the real world works. We value human dignity, but we believe unchecked immigration will destroy a nation and destroy it from within. Leo's belief, he ignores real-world consequences unless it's at the Vatican, and it makes me loathe him. There's even more hypocrisy. The Catholic News Agency, in 2025, quote, Vatican cracks down on illegal entry into its territory. The Vatican also bans unauthorized overflights with penalties up to 25,000 euros and 3 years in prison. Boy, talk about underscoring strict control over their own borders while preaching openness elsewhere. What a freaking hypocrite Leo and the Vatican is, and Francis was. Let's talk gun control. So Leo's actively promoted gun control, has used his ex platform to advocate for stricter measures. That was noted by Politico this last week, and it highlights his focus on progressive issues. So the Christian teachings are peace. The church emphasizes nonviolence, rooted in Christ's teachings. Blessed are the peacemakers. Then I don't see the Vatican blessing Trump, who's trying to get peace between Ukraine and Russia. He's condemning him and Vance because they're threatening his illegal alien grift or immigration grift. So the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, there's a document from January 20th, and it quotes Francis on the suffering caused by military spending. And Leo, his anti-gun stance, will continue that tradition. Look, I'm not into this military spending as it's done, only because we're overpaying. But we're the big brother of the world. See, people who say we're not, I would like us not to be, but we are by default. Because when good men do nothing, bad men will rule. I don't know how the saying goes. I forget. But that's pretty much, in a nutshell, what it means. The church also teaches that safety comes from faith in God, not firearms. Tell that to all the women who have been shot and killed by illegals. Let me repeat that. The church teaches that safety comes from faith in God, not firearms. He encourages Catholics to trust in divine providence. aligning with the church's spiritual focus. So reducing guns or access to guns prevents violence and fosters compassion. So they want to take our hand. They say regulate, but they want to take our handguns. Set up age requirements. So that's where Leo stands. They see the government as a moral authority. Leaders have a duty to enact laws prioritizing safety. I agree with that, but not at the expense of my Second Amendment and guns. Think about that. Leo sees government as moral actors, but then again, they are a nation state, the Vatican. Again, his implication, they say reduce, but it's really to take our guns. Leo supports a world with fewer weapons. Let me give you a little bit about the reality of it. Let me give you my perspective. We have a well-armed Vatican. The Vatican maintains a heavily armed security force. Seems to me, Leo, you'd be contradicting your anti-gun stance. What's good for thee is not good for me. That's what Leo's stance is. There's an Amelan article from a couple years ago. Armed defense of Vatican highlights the church's hypocrisy on guns. And it notes the pontifical Swiss Guard, established in 1506, and the Gendarmerie Corps are armed to the teeth and willing to use deadly force. Then let's talk about the Pope Mobile. How many of y'all can sit there and afford to get a luxury car that keeps you protected from bullets? But William, he's an important person. Doesn't God view us all equally as his flock? Yes, he does. So if guns are unnecessary and divine protection will suffice, as Leo claims, why does the Vatican rely on the Swiss Guards and all their guns? Things that make you go home. And I'm not kidding. I'm being dead serious. God will protect you. That's what they're saying. Well, then you don't need protection there, Leo. The Amelan article cites the 1994 Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace that declares, quote, the right of legitimate defense by armed means exists, unquote, for those responsible for others. Ergo, the government can have guns. So that's how they justify them having guns. Oh, no, we can have guns. Legitimate defense by armed means exists for those responsible for others. Well, I'm responsible for my family, so Leo, using your own rules, I can have one. But you only view it from a governmental outlook. The church has a history of tyranny. And that's why we have our guns, not because of the church, but because of our own government. See, having guns is for one reason, to protect ourselves against tyranny. And let's take a look. The Japanese said, no, we ain't even thinking of invading America. Why? Because every person there has a damn three guns, Tyranny, they annihilated the Knights Templar. The church, the Catholic Church, partnered with the French king to destroy and genocide Knights of the Knights Templar in 1307. Pope Clement V, under pressure from King Philip IV, he wasn't really under pressure, they went along with it. Under pressure from King Philip IV of France, because he owned, in today's terms, would be hundreds of billions of dollars to the Knights Templar. He ordered the rest out of envy and fear because they were growing in power and popularity. And the Pope Clement saw that too. Can't have anybody more popular than me. And the fact that the Knights Templar had created one of the most efficient banking systems ever, one of the first globally. I killed them all. They were tortured, burned at the stake, and their wealth seized. And guess what? Weapons played a big part of that from the government. So don't talk to me, Pope, about my guns as you massacre, torture, and steal from your own flock. Spanish Inquisition, anybody? Catholic Church or Catholic monarchs supported by the church. They targeted Jews, Muslims, and heretics. Tens of thousands of deaths. Over 32,000 executions occurred, often through church torture and burning at the stake, with the church's approval. Pope Sixtus IV, 1483 bull. The masses were disarmed, unable to afford weapons, powerless to resist. Don't take my guns, people. Because this current government, they're no different than what the church was back then. So Leo's anti-gun stance, boy, it ignores history, doesn't it? Why? He's probably a big fan. Man, I'm in the mood for no movie. We ain't no movies on the Inquisition. Looking for a good time. More hypocrisy. There was a 2023 incident where a car rushed a Vatican gate and Swiss guards apprehended a driver. And they were able to do that easily because they were armed. So, and I'm okay with that. But it's just the hypocrisy of Leo. We need a gun-free world. Except for my Swiss army. I believe we have the right to bear arms. That's a fundamental right of our liberty and self-defense. Leo is attacking that core freedom, especially for us who live under the Constitution. An armed populace ensures governments remain accountable. So we loathe Leo. Firearms allow law-abiding individuals to protect themselves. And let's not forget the Second Amendment is a cornerstone of American identity, and Leo does not care for that. His global disarmament agenda dismisses cultural differences, feeling out of touch with my values. Not feeling, he is out of touch. But then again, he was never in touch. I don't do well with those who allegedly protect pedophiles. We have compassion. We believe in human dignity. We believe in restricting gun rights will leave people vulnerable. So we don't want our guns taken away, but we do believe in human dignity. Leo thinks that taking our guns comes with human dignity, or human dignity comes with taking our guns. So Leo has this ideological peace-building mindset that is greater than practical self-defense. Why? Because it allows more control from government. And he views himself as the leader of the world. The Vatican is seen as a government, as a nation. Let's get to the heart of everything here. I told you this was deep. I don't mess around. I go deep. Pope Leo the 14th stance on pedophilia. So there is no direct evidence of Pope Leo the 14th actions or statements on pedophilia within the church. Well, when you sit there and fly somebody out in 2001, when all this corruption scandals being exposed as they did Cardinal Law, and hide him out in the Vatican. Things that make you go home. And part of the reason I say there's no direct evidence as Pope Leo. We're going to talk about Robert Francis Prevost, though. But as Pope, he's yet to speak on the atrocities done by the Catholic priests and covered up by bishops, cardinals, and the Vatican. His defense, he's only met Pope a few days. But he inherits Francis' incomplete reform. Francis, I'm taking care of that Cardinal Law, stay in the background there. So he inherits the 2022 creation of a department within the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith to handle abuse cases. Now I want to tell you people something. Pope Francis was made Pope in 2013. Took him 9 years to finally go, okay, we need to do something about this pedophilia. I'm tired of seeing all these KY bottles around here. 9 years. That should have been one of the first things he did in 2013. But he chose not to. Leo's silence when he was Prevost, Francis Prevost, speaks volumes. Volumes on where he stands. His silence shows he has greater focus on an institution to have institutional stability over transparency. It's not confirmed, but it's what I speculate based on his past. Some Vatican officials will likely defend his inaction as a means of maintaining stability, keeping the church on the straight and narrow in terms of not being destroyed. There's a Le Monde article that notes under Francis, the church faced global scandals. But often prioritize institutional preservation, meaning Pope Francis says we got to preserve and save the Vatican. Damn those who've been raped and sodomized. And I don't see Leo changing that. I see Leo continuing that approach. The church emphasizes mercy, teaching that past mistakes can be forgiven with repentance. You hit out Cardinal Law after he was exposed for hiding pedophilia, not being held to account. That's not redemption and forgiveness. That's sin. Now, his supporters will lie. Well, William, he's focusing on spiritual healing. Oh, that's the yoga people. Spiritual healing. Okay. So he's okay with do 13 Hail Mary room and call me in the morning. You're good to go, pedophile. That's pretty much their redemption and forgiveness. They claim the Vatican, oh, no, we have reforms and that's been implemented. That's what they may say, but we have yet to see anything. The other thing is, if they openly address scandals, it could damage your credibility. I got news for you. That ship sailed generations ago. I looked at for Leo to prioritize discretion. Why? I believe he was part of the hiding of it. And one reason he was flown to the Vatican in 2001. But he's looking at prioritizing that discretion over transparency and admitting to their sin. Why do that? Because that means a lot of the gravy train will end. Let's talk about Robert Francis Prevost and the allegations. Talk about his past actions. Friar James Ray case. 2000 to 2012. In 2000, Prevost, then a leader in the Order of St. Augustine in Chicago, I assume F.R.'s prior. That's what I put in my notes to short. Let me double check that. So, real quick, he had complaints against him too for how he handled this. Sent to the Vatican, nothing happened. His punishment, we're going to punish you, Prevost. You're going to become Pope. So anyway, James Ray. Prevost, then a leader in the Order of St. Augustine in Chicago, he allowed James Ray, accused of sexually abusing minors, to live in an Augustinian rectory. Guess what? It was near a Catholic school. Ray admitted to inappropriate behavior with boys, yet Prevost approved his residence. That was criticized by Cardinal Blaise Cupich as inappropriate. That's inappropriate. His punishment, he became Pope. Richard McGrath, 2018. McGrath, an Augustinian priest and former president of a Catholic high school in Illinois, was removed from ministry in 2018 after allegations of possessing child pornography and sexually abusing a minor. Yo, little one, go to my office. Yes, Mr. Priest? What do you need? That KY. Prevost was a senior Augustinian leader. He may have overseen or failed to address this case. See, we have to say may because it's never been investigated. Suggesting a pattern of oversight failures. I'm not done. Those cases in Chicago, flew them out to the Vatican. And we know everything's going to be on a download there if anything happens. Woo! The download. Yeah. Brothers ain't got nothing on the Vatican priests. So then he gets shipped out to Peru. Not back to Chicago. To the Chiclayo diocese and abuse allegations there. 2014-2023. As a bishop of Chiclayo, Prevost was accused of failing to investigate abuse claims against Eleuterio Vasquez Gonzalez and a priest by the name of Yeskin. Cardinal Prevost never investigated abuse claims. That's what the victims, the alleged victims state, including Ana Maria Gispet. These are Indian names, native Indians. These are names that having went from there, I recognize the surnames. They met Prevost in 2022, but no canonical investigation was opened. despite claims of following norms. Yeah, covering up norms. And critics allege there was documentation that was sent to Rome, and it was designed to avoid action. That's a serious charge. We're going to punish you, Leo, or we're going to punish you, Prevost. Okay, I'm ready for my punishment. You are Pope. So let's look at the Peruvian allegations. 2022, three women alleged they were sexually abused as teenagers by two priests, Ricardo Yeskin and Eleuterio Vázquez González, as I stated already. And when they were accused, that provost was the bishop. Again, they failed. I'm trying to get a little deeper here, but it doesn't seem like there's much more depth. Prevost failed to investigate when they reported the abuse. Okay, they reported the abuse in 2022. Prevost was bishop there from 2014 to 2023. Now, lo and behold, they transferred the priest for health reasons, and no proper inquiry was opened. The survivors network of those abused by priests, SNAP, that's what I said, they filed a complaint against Prevost of covering up the abuse and alleging he sent inadequate information. He sent nothing to see here, Francis. That's my boy. That's my boy. I got plans for you, Prevost. I'm going to punish you, making you Pope. They didn't suspend the priest during the investigation and failed to notify civil authorities or offer any victim support. An Italian journalist reported the claim Prevost actively avoided the case. Now, the Diocese of Chiclayo countered that Prevost met with the victims in April 22. Yeah, so, I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you. Oh, your sister Mary, pass the basket around to this family. That's pretty much what happened in the case of my family in Panama when my cousin died. Give me money. Oh, we're sorry, your son's dead to my aunt. We're sorry, your cousin's dead. You got any money? I swear to God. They had the audacity to ask me for money to donate to them when my family was suffering the death of my cousin, my aunt's and uncle's son. Now, the diocese, again, they countered that they met with the victims. They say they suspended the priest, and they conducted a local investigation and forwarded it to the Vatican's dicastery for the doctrine of the faith. See, that's what they say they did. We have no proof they actually did. A local prosecutor closed the civil case for insufficient evidence. They didn't investigate. The church did. Of course it was insufficient. Now, there was a social media post that came across that said the allegations were fabricated by the group because Francis dissolved a group that was affiliated, a group tied to the Sodalitium, and that's a conservative movement that investigates abuse scandals, and it was aiming to discredit Prevost due to his alignment with Francis. And they're saying it was a conspiracy theory. And they say it was part of a campaign against Prevost. I don't know, people. 2001, knowingly putting a priest who admits to molesting a boy right next to a Catholic school? No. There's no evidence supports the claims that the victims were paid to be quiet. And the Vatican has denied wrongdoing, and the lack of an official response from the diocese or Vatican remains a point of contention. So despite the claim of the 2020 investigation, there is no canonical action that was taken against the accused priest, and the civil case's 2023 closure for insufficient evidence suggests Prevost's minimal cooperation with authorities, and that undermines the Vatican's defense, meaning they did not help work with authorities to investigate. So everything's saying, not enough evidence here for anything out. It's kind of like when Nancy Pelosi says they'll make a phone call to the media, tell them this, this, and this. The media reports in the papers, on social media, on their websites, well, we're hearing this, this, and this. Then Nancy Pelosi will come back and say, see, it is legit. It's reported in the paper. That's what the Vatican's doing here. Same thing. The alleged far-right campaign lacks any evidence beyond somebody stating that. And Prevost documented in action in Chicago supports a pattern of cover-ups, not a conspiracy. Some other examples of the churches cover up of pedophilia. John Gogan, a Boston Globe article, January 6, 2002. Church allowed abuse by priests for years, reveals Gogan molested over 130 children from the 60s to the 90s. Church officials, including Cardinal Bernard Law, moved them across parishes despite knowing what he was doing. And that led to his 2002 conviction, and I guess he was murdered in prison. Let me double check that. No, I'm saying Cardinal Law, not Cardinal Law, but Gogan, John Gogan. He was murdered in prison. In my notes that I found, on August 23rd, 2003, Gogan, 68, was strangled and beaten to death in his cell at Susa Baranowski Correctional Center in Massachusetts. Joseph Drews, who was serving life sentence, he had a history of hating homosexual plant attack. Gogan was apprised due to his crimes. Gogan was in protective custody. Man, these people always died. Epstein's. Anyway, Cardinal Law moved them around. Then there's Fernando Caradima in Chile. September 28, 2018, Chilean priest at center of abuse scandal defrocked by Pope Francis. Kind of had no choice. He was busted. Abused minors from the 80s and the 90s. He knew about this, Francis, and there's no doubt in my mind. Why? Church leaders ignore complaints. They reassigned him until his 2011 Vatican conviction, before Francis got there. His influence persisted, showing systemic protection. So, okay, I'm sorry. Maybe Francis defrocked him. So I apologize. Francis had nothing to do with that one. Peter Hulerman. He abused boys in the 70s. Despite therapy recommendations, he was moved to new parishes under then Archbishop Joseph Ratzinger, continuing to offend until 2010. So here's my point. The church preaches forgiveness but denies justice to victims. Pope Francis issues new rules on reporting abuse, but victims say it falls short. I'm with the victims. So it requires reporting, but it lacks any enforcement. And it allows bishops to self-regulate. Give me 13 Hail Marys and you're good. I think Leo is going to be the same way. He's going to continue this hypocrisy, preaching mercy while shielding abusers. I expect that to continue. These are not isolated events. Le Monde reports that there are hundreds of thousands of victims globally. 216,000 in France. That's report 1950 to 2020. What does the church do? They transfer priests. Documented in the U.S., Europe, and Latin America. This is a worldwide issue. France has ignored it. 9 years. Maybe we should do something. Yeah, y'all got to report it, but you got to self-regulate. Leo's going to continue that. Prevost's alleged cover-ups in Chicago and Chiclayo. That mirrors the Vatican's decades-long practice. Of what? Of shielding abusers. Again, 216,000 French victims, 1950 to 2020. Cardinal Law's protection in Boston. Man, Francis and Leo will continue to uphold a corrupt institutional legacy. We believe, I as a former Catholic, that the church must hold itself to the highest standards. But we know they won't. They haven't for hundreds and hundreds of years. Polish cleric retires in the face of cover-up accusations. Gdansk Archbishop Sławoj Leżoglot's resignation for hiding abuse. Retires. Not held accountable. Pope Francis, give me 13 Hail Marys, you're good to go. Pope Leo, I like Pope Francis' report. But y'all get to determine what happens. If Leo follows this pattern, you can do nothing but loathe him, and I believe he will. Be why he's perpetuating a betrayal of the church's foundation that they've never lived up to. Let's be honest. Survivors deserve justice and transparency. Leo has a history of continuing. Doesn't matter if we demand high-ranking officials face scrutiny, they won't. They won't. We believe Leo will be a pope of inaction, which makes him complicit. There will never be full disclosure. There will never be independent investigations. If they are, they're shams. There's a backlog of 2,000 cases under Francis that we saw. I don't see Leo addressing those. Without reforms, which will never happen, they are a nation state unto themselves. Future generations of young altar boys will suffer. Faith will continue to erode. Pope Francis may say he condemned child sex abuse and church cover-ups, but he did nothing about it. There was a Pennsylvania report identified over 1,000 victims. Leo's inactions will continue to alienate and diminish Catholic growth, which is good. If you're not going to sit there and take care of your flock, you don't deserve to have a flock. And you know, they talk about the Bible. No, it's more about the Catholic doctrine. Why? Matthew 18, verse 6-7. Jesus says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, talking about God, to stumble, or talking about Jesus, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Catholic doctrine, nah, we're going to make you pope. So Matthew 18, 6, 7 implies severe divine judgment for harming children. Prime example, to protect the vulnerable. Psalm 82, 3, 4. God judges those who fail to defend the weak and the fatherless, or rescue the weak and the needy, implying punishment for neglect or harm. There are no more needy and weak than young altar boys. It's obvious the goal of the Vatican is to protect the institution at all costs, regardless of the wake of destroyed lives they've created. And they created that by allowing pedophilia to run rampant. And to this day, they keep covering it up in the name of protecting or in protecting the institution. So who is putting themselves above God? Pope Francis, Pope Leo, and the Vatican. Why? Well, there's a lack of any actions taken. No honesty. Their apologies were brought about after the mountains of evidence exposed them. Let me tell you about Bob Rich. And the only reason I'm naming Bob Rich is this was a public story. I knew Bob Rich. I worked with Bob Rich. I didn't understand Bob Rich's plight. I was so engrossed in my business and growing it and getting ahead. I mean, I cared more about the fact we were the NFL Network's first fantasy analyst. My company out of my garage was one of the top three in the world. At one point, our website ranked in the top 2,000 in the world per Alexa. The first fantasy sports company to be featured on a pregame NFL show. Bob was aligned with wanting to do that. But as I got to know Bob during a second tour, when we were creating a pilot together, he just kept going back to his abuse. And I was so focused. I didn't ignore it. I felt his plight. I felt his pain. And I just didn't care enough to listen like I should have. And for that, I apologize, Bob. He's a Minnesota survivor. He was abused by Reverend Robert Michael Thurner from age 12 for years in Hopkins, Minnesota during the 70s. Despite reporting the abuse, Thurner was reassigned to a different parish, and he allegedly abused again. Bob Rich settled in 1992 for $850,000 with the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis, but it brought no closure. He was messed up in the head. It messed him up so bad, and that's why I look back at it and I'm like, God, I just did not understand what he was going through. Money doesn't fix you. Bob ended up with a cocaine habit, and trauma blew through the money. He was trying to buy happiness through the money. This is what Bob said. He told the Star Tribune in 2015. It's online, but I think you got to pay for the story. But the Star Tribune. Just because you get the cash doesn't mean the pain goes away. And he was talking about the church's failure to protect victims. And that's a pattern that Prevost has perpetuated in Chicago and Chiclayo, allegedly. Bob Rich is a Minnesota native. Michael Thurner was obviously a Catholic priest. Bob was 12 years old. The abuse, again, began in the early 70s and continued until Bob left for college. So at least 8 years. It occurred at various locations, a rectory, and even in a car a few miles from Bob's neighborhood. So how did it start? It started after Thurner, he was a visiting speaker at Bob's school, took him to lunch, sneaked him into an R-rated movie, and then abused him at the rectory. So Rich described the abuse for over 6 years with lasting emotional trauma, including flashbacks triggered by places like a rectory or church bells. And that's, the profoundness of the psychological toll. And when he was describing it in flashbacks, I guess why he was interviewed by the Star Tribune, that they were landmines, he said. And the abuse affected his ability to trust and his mental health. And I can tell you, it did affect his mental health. There were times I was like, what's the matter with you? You know? He wasn't tight on how he did things. I ended up writing the pilot myself the day of shooting. We're doing rewrites going into the day of shooting. And it worked out for the best. But now I look at it, I'm like, I see why Bob was like how he was. And when I met Bob, he was in Minnesota. I did not have no clue the first go. Bob and I worked together closely during the beginnings of the company build up after my company was established and I was looking to expand on it, doing a pilot, this or that. I reconnect with Bob. And that's when Bob started. Bob, I guess, saw me as a friend and I didn't return that friendship. I was so involved and that's where I was wrong. Again, I apologize, Bob. It pains me to think of how selfish I was back then in that sense. So focused on that and getting angry at Bob because of the show and how everything went down. He was driving me nuts. But the lawsuit happened in 92. Bob was in his 20s, fought a lawsuit against the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Again, $850,000 settlement, significant for the time, early 90s. And it was supposedly intended to compensate for the year's abuse. Bob thought the settlement would bring closure. It didn't. Within 4 years, the money was gone. Some of it given away. Some spent on California beach house, Porsche, cocaine habit. And that's, he used the money to help cope with the pain. He was trying to buy happiness. Thurner admitted to the Archbishop John Roach in November of 82 that he had a sexual relationship with a 16-year-old boy, that being Bob, and it led to a letter of resignation. However, by summer of 83, Thurner was reassigned to a church in West St. Paul, that's in Minneapolis, where he allegedly abused a 7-year-old girl. I found that odd girl. I always assumed it would be a boy. He retired in December 91 and then was permanently removed in 2002. At least four other individuals accused Thurner of sexual abuse, one case nearly reaching trial before the Archdiocese bankruptcy filing in 2015 halted proceedings. The point here is Thurner was moved around despite higher-ups knowing of the allegations, and that is a systemic issue in how the church handled abuse cases. They cared more for their priests and the institution, just as Pope Francis and Pope Theo did and does. Now, so the Archdiocese bankruptcy, the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis, they filed for Chapter 11. And that froze over 20 lawsuits, including those related to Thurner's victim. And this was partly due to the 2013 Minnesota Child Victims Act. And that lifted the statute of limitations for child abuse. And that led to over 400 claims against the Archdiocese. So it was a strategic approach to file bankruptcy so they could reorganize, and that reorganization helped them pay out $210 million settlement in 2018 for 450 victims, the second largest payout by the Catholic Church in the U.S. Bob hated the Catholic Church, and I don't blame him. Maybe knowing that that happened, maybe knowing how I wasn't a voice, an ear Bob could listen to, knowing my studying of the Catholic Church and in college, my experience and how they treated us. And real quick on that experience, again, my cousin had died. My family was mourning them. I was supposed to see my cousin. I was supposed to be there 4 days earlier when he died. I flew down anyway. I was so, don't worry. They got a deal. I was like, look, I'm going to go down there and be with my family. I haven't seen them in 15 years. The least I can do is offer support. I was able to help financially as well. That made me feel a little better in terms of being able to help the family out. But I'll never forget when the two nuns, God bless them, they were nice. I felt bad for them doing the dirty work of the priest. And my uncle, God bless him, still had a sense of humor. He said, oh, yeah, Willie, Barry, Barry. He said it with a smile. You know, time of mourning. It was so pathetic. It was laughable. And there he is sitting in the car, not coming in. I go, why is he doing that? He's drinking. Wait. We sat there, what seemed like an eternity, just a couple minutes. Sure enough, that's when I felt so bad for these nuns doing the dirty work. And all of that combined, I had no love for the Catholic Church either. No love. So the Archdiocese handling of abusive priests, including Thurner, was obviously criticized, but the church still did nothing in terms of holding the higher ups accountable. Thurner was reassigned. Cover ups to protect the institution. So how do we know about this? Well, this happened in the 70s and the 80s, and most records in researching this, I knew about the story. Bob had told me, but I was like, I know. I thought the reason I knew about it is Bob had, I had sold my company. This was the second phase, and I was still tied to the industry. So Bob had kept talking about this, and the article must have come out later, and Bob told me about it. But that's how I was able to remember. I knew the article was out there, and I found it. I was able to gather this information. But all of this happened obviously pre-internet. So this Star Tribune, thank God for it. And it provided a detailed account. And that was happened because of the 2013 Child Victims Act and 2015 bankruptcy, bringing all this back to light. And my point is that how many, I would say tens of thousands since the Catholic Church was there, has this happened to others that we'll never know about? Families destroyed. And this is a true story. Obviously, the Star Tribune article details it. The bishopaccountability.org corroborates Bob Rich's settlement and Thurner's history. The Minneapolis Legal Examiner mentions Bob's potential documentary that I don't think he ever got off the ground. I'm not sure. I remember him talking about it. It's sickening. It's sickening. And to everybody, I know this has been a long podcast, but I had a lot to get off my chest off of this. My take, Pope Leo's reign begins in shame. It's built on lies and cover-ups. We can demand his resignation. We can support survivors through SNAP and starve the Vatican of donations. We want to do all that, but it's going to be for naught. That rich government grift they have is filling their coffers. They've expanded to Latin America, Asia, and Africa, and they're going to bleed them dry. They're going to do to them what they try to do to me in Panama. This is a poor neighborhood. The running joke there was to take the cop 3 days to come get a body when there was a murder. I was never allowed to be alone. When they call this Pope the Yankee Pope, the Latin Yankee, you know, a couple of people there call me Blanquito because I stuck out. Colon is technically where I'm from in terms of legal paperwork. I go there, it's like me walking to Harlem. I stick out. I'm never let alone. I'm not trying to sound like a badass or rough neighborhood. It's just, it was poor. A lot of poor. God, I love the people, the community. And part of it is because they treated me so well. They love Americans, and I was like the protected class. Oh yeah, that's Willito. Keep an eye on him. I'm a guy in my 30s and 40s, and they're treating me like a little guy. Keep an eye on him. Protect him. Don't let anything happen to him. Or Tia Carolina is going to kill us. You know, I mean, it's the love I got from them. I don't have any words for, you know. So I'll never forget that. So, and my point again is they've expanded to Central, South America, Latin America, Asia, Africa. They are going to pull the scam on others. They're going to bleed them dry. Poor people don't have a pot to piss in, as we say. They're going to bleed. They're going to be able to collect blood out of a stone, out of a rock. They will. The church's victims deserve justice. I wish I could say, let's make it happen in the will, but it won't. But hopefully people like me will grow. I heard one of my favorite podcasters, she was doing everything to acknowledge but defend the church. Oh, we forgive, we this. Yeah, let it be one of your teenage kids getting raped anally. Being told, hey, oh yes, hey, give me the KY jelly. See how you feel. Anybody, how you feel. You know, in doing this story, it just breaks my heart what happened to Bob. A life destroyed. I thought about Bob. I reached out to him today. I said, Bob, I need to let you know our good friend Emo Cadlick passed away last year. I didn't know if you knew. And then I started to type to try to apologize over not being an ear for him. And I couldn't. I will, but man, I tell you, it's tough when it's somebody you know, you realize the atrocity. And I have nothing to do with that. I'm not close to Bob. But I come from a fundamentalist family. And thank God my family's not like that. They're evangelicals. They left the Catholic Church along with my mom. When we moved to the States, my mom died inside of it. And with that, my friends, I'm going to close this out. I give you the sad, pathetic excuse of an institution in my eyes called the Catholic Church with its empire at its capital, the Vatican, doing everything they can to sweep the pedophile crisis under the rug, to keep the grift going with immigration, the want and desire to take our guns away. Do not forget, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. You can find this podcast at Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Pandora, Spotify. Before I sign out, I do want to say this. I have been contemplating, and maybe I will do it. I think I'm going to go to a friend of mine who's Catholic. Our audience knows this individual very well. I'm not going to say the name. I want to confirm it first. To have them come back and talk about the church and how they see it. So you can see the other side. I think it's only fair. I have no love for the Catholic Church, but millions do. And I think in going back to my journalistic roots, I should give unbiased or allow somebody to give their unbiased take on how much they love the church and how they view the church, Church of Mercy. And with that, my friends, keep your head on a swivel, especially if you're a young Catholic altar boy, because you don't know where it's going to hit you from. I am William Del Pilar for Fired Up. And until next week, stay safe.